Welcome to Authors on Tour Live, a weekly podcast for people who love to hear about books from the authors themselves. Presented by Belco Credit Union. Visit www.belco.org/authors.asp to learn more about how Belco can help you. My name is Darren Fote, and today we are podcasting live from the Tattered Cover Bookstore, one of the premier independent bookstores in the nation, with three locations in the Metro Denver area. You can visit www.authorsontourlive.com for a complete list of upcoming podcasts. Wait a minute, it's time to begin.
Welcome. On behalf of the Tattered Cover, I'd like to take this opportunity to thank you for your support of our locally owned bookstore. We really appreciate you being here tonight. Our guest tonight is the creator and owner of the award-winning restaurant Blue Ginger outside of Boston, Massachusetts, a star of the long-running cooking show Simply Ming, now in its eighth season, which airs here in Denver on Rocky Mountain PBS. I think it's on Saturdays at 12:30. And he's the author of several best-selling cookbooks. He is here tonight to discuss and sign his new cookbook, Simply Ming One-Pot Meals. Please join me in welcoming Chef Ming Tsai.
Thank you, Heather. Good evening. Nice to see you all. I've been in Denver for 1 hour and 45 minutes. It's been very good so far. I have not been arrested. That's good. So I am here to briefly talk about the book, and which I'm very excited about. And to be perfectly honest, I would love to just open it up to you all. And I will answer every possible question that I'm legally allowed to answer. I would... I'm sorry? You want to know who won? Yeah, so do I. oh, no, I guess I know. And I'm not going to get into, like, red state, blue states, and things like that, because that's just never good, because it kind of divides it right in the middle. And we'll just talk about food, which is very non-divisive. This book, Simply Ming One-Pot Meals, really is... it's hard to say, like, which is my favorite child or which is my favorite book, but... I can say this. This is the most timely book I've ever had. And the reason I say that is, and the last reason is the real reason why it's timely, but let me just tell you why I love this book so much. First, I think everyone's probably busy in life. I think we Americans are busier than ever before. Between Twitter and Twatter and Tweeter and Facebook and Moonshine and everything else, we're always connected. And after, this is my sixth city, so there's a theme now that I'm getting, and this is actually the subliminal reason why I wrote this book, is the art of dining as a family is being lost. I came from Dayton, Ohio. 5 p.m., not 5:01, 5 p.m., we sat down and had dinner, my brother and my two parents. Every single day, and every Friday at 5 p.m., we went to grandparents' house. And, you know, it's in Dayton, Ohio. I took that for granted. I mean, yeah, it's dinner. I can guarantee you that doesn't happen to most of you people here now, because there's ballet, there's karate, there's soccer, there's this, there's that, there's both parents working, there's whatever. And back then, fast food wasn't the way it was, and food to go wasn't the way it was. And the good news is food is better, actually, now in this country, thank God. But to cook, there's nothing, I think, better for family and family values, and then everything came out of it. Because for me, as a kid, all our problems, all our joys, all our what are we doing next? It always ended up the topic of conversation, of course, was what are we eating next? That's all we ever talked about. So what are we eating next? And actually, my dad's famous comment is in Chinese is "bushur bai bushur." So when we had guests over, he would always say "bushur bai bushur" to all our Chinese friends. And by the way, when we had the Wongs and the Chus over in our house, we were Chinatown. All eight of us was Chinatown for Dayton, Ohio, and so. One napalm bomb. There goes the Asian community. And or food poisoning. Neither happened, thank God. But butcher by butcher is you might as well eat it because you already paid for it. And so we would always talk about the next meal, the next meal, the next meal. And that it's a shame that that gathering is being lost. And I think if there's an easier way to cook, for example, maybe people will start cooking more. And I think the hardest thing, especially if you have children, is cleaning. It's the cleanup. You make your good dinner, boom, you had your two glasses of wine, then you look at your sink and there's four pots and this and that and the plates and it's you're like, oh, what a pain. So the idea, so that was the first part of this is one pot. Look, Rachel Ray popularized it a few years ago, who's a great friend. The Chinese, we've been cooking in a wok for a couple thousand years. The French have been doing cassoulet and coq au vin in one pot. So one pot, I certainly didn't invent one pot. No one invented it. I mean, it's been around for a long time. But an East-West version of it, this may be one of the first. And the idea is keep it simple. As you, if you've gone through the book, it's one page, the recipe, one page, not a page and a half, one page and one photo. As a shout out to Antonis, who's the photographer, brilliant photographer. I was the food stylist, meaning there was no food styling. I took the food, threw it on a plate. While it was hot, he lit it, we took it. The only thing we did that was, that you may not do at home, but I actually do this at home, even for my kids, is I wiped the rim. Because if there's sauce on the rim, I mean, it makes a difference. We have to, you obviously do it in a restaurant, expect it. But I do that at home. I slice the chicken breast at home. And, you know, because even for kids, if they see it and it looks delicious, guess what? They're going to eat it too. So, and the reason I'm psyched on that is I think there's a lot of cookbooks that do a disservice. Because the pictures are so beautiful. And then you make it. And you're like, WTF? You know, I mean, it's not even close to what you made. And then you already feel bad. And you haven't even tried it yet. You already demoralized that your food doesn't look nearly as good as Thomas Keller or someone. You know, Ferran Adrià. Like, how come my triple exploding olive doesn't look like his triple exploding olive? You know, 72 hours later. So I'm very proud of the fact that I guarantee you, you make one of these dishes, you make the back cover dish, for example, your dish is going to look exactly the same. Two, most of the dishes are incredibly healthy. I am not a diet chef, right? I never count calories. I don't care if it's the fat. Asian technique, braising and steaming and wok stirring, which is a couple tablespoons of oil, are very healthy ways. The ratio of the meat to the carb to the protein or to the veg is a healthier ratio. It's really Dr. Walter Will is a friend. I'm on this obesity, or it's called the Nutritional Roundtable to Fight Obesity at Harvard. Dr. Walter Will is the chief nutritionist there, so we've been doing a lot together. He does the reverse food pyramid, and I try to follow that at home and eating. I try to follow that. Again, I'm not a diet chef, but Asian technique just bodes so well to that type of eating. So the majority of the food is incredibly healthy. Look, there's some fried items, but even the fried is healthier fried. They're panko-crusted eggplant chips, which are delicious, as opposed to if I did a beer batter, which would soak up a lot more oil. So there's actually healthy ways of frying, and it's a higher temperature, so it's in and out. And the third part, which really makes this book, I think, really timely, is most of the recipes, the entrees especially, are $20 or less for four people. And that compares... Whew, you're a college student, huh? No. A mom of three. And you're in college. That's impressive. Freshman. Wow. I'd like to meet your faculty. It used to be the old adage that, oh, you know, I only have $5 to feed my kids or my family. I go to fast food. And that is true. I mean, that is actually one of the biggest issues when Dr. Walter Will and I speak. Single family, they don't know how to cook. And to get sustenance for $5, you can actually go to fast food and get sustenance. It's horrible for you, but it is a way to survive. And that's why a lot of this country eats the way they do, which is a shame. So the idea was, okay, let's make stuff that's reasonable, which means I use lesser cut of meat, meaning short rib or oxtail, or you know, there's certainly no ribeye in there, ground pork, ground chicken. I use dark chicken over white chicken because it just tastes better. And now you go to, what's your big grocery store here? It's not stopping. King Super? You, right, you can get yourself that value pack of chicken thighs, right? It's like 1,700 chicken thighs for $4. I mean, literally, right? I mean, it's crazy how many chicken thighs you get. And that's, of course, the best. Now, put this mental note and write this down. This is something that's something new I'm doing. It's nothing to do with this book. But there's something called angiogenesis. Does anyone know what that is? Okay. I don't either. No. Go to TED.com, right? You guys know TED.com, which is the great website. There's, you know, there's Clinton and Gates and anyone that's really done something significant. You know, Maya Angelou, the Dalai Lama, they're doing speeches and lectures. Go to TED.com, search William Lee, L-I. He's the founder. We had a three-hour meeting today. Founder of the Angiogenesis Foundation. Judah Falk was the who's now passed. He passed recently. He discovered angiogenesis. And I'm not going to talk a lot about it because it's not about him or this. But my point is he has proven that actually dark meat, chicken meat, is better for you than white, which is the point of this. Because there's something called canine. And the angiogenesis is the formation of blood vessels. That go, it's all natural. You cut yourself, you get a scab. That's angiogenesis. We need that. For women, not men, the formation of creation of placenta is angiogenesis. Menstruation is angiogenesis. I've had neither, but I have cut myself. Right? No, I haven't. I'm just being honest. This is very, it's all on my sleeve, guys. So you need angiogenesis. But there's something that happens called abnormal angiogenesis, which is when blood vessels attach itself to a cancer cell. Then it forms a tumor, or to a fat cell, and that causes obesity. And he's proving, and we're proving together, hopefully through food eventually, that you can actually pick the right foods to eat to prevent you ever of getting cancer or obesity. And if you can prevent yourself from getting obesity, then diabetes and heart disease and everything else is out the window as well. It's amazing stuff. So look at it. There'll be a lot more about it. He's already been on Oz twice. He's going to go on Dr. Oz two more times. The 17th is the next time he's on Dr. Oz. We're going to do a couple of cooking things together. It's very cool. And it's everything you think it should be. Green leafy vegetables, every mushroom in the world, dark chicken meat, cauliflower, carrots. I mean, it's stuff that makes sense. It's not supersized French fries. Although there's some surprising things in there as well. But the point is, you can actually really, the old adage, you are what you eat. It's true. You can actually eat really healthy and really well. But regardless of all that, eat dark chicken meat. It just tastes better and it's cheaper, right? So the lesser cuts is a way to save money. Now, let me make it very clear. Simple does not mean 20 minutes. Simple could mean 3 hours, but hang on. You're not cooking for 3 hours. It's just that it's a braise. So you get it all in the pot, and then you can walk away. Or you can sear it, and it becomes a 1.5 pot meal if you have a crock pot. Right? If you have grandma's crock pot, because you can't sear in a crock pot, so you have to take a saute to sear your short rib or sear your oxtail, and then you can throw it in your crock pot. All Clad actually makes a great crock pot that has a removable cast iron insert. You can throw it on your stove on a flame, sear, and then put the whole thing back in. So one pot doesn't mean 20. A lot of them, the stir fries and the sautés are 20 minutes. You know, some of the rice dishes, you know, it's like a rice pilaf. You get it, boom, you put it in the oven, that takes 30 minutes to cook. But is there anything really better? I mean, I think about my home and when I grew up in Dayton, the smell of your parents cooking. The two best smells in the world, of course, is bread baking. Or Cinnabon, which they've really discovered. And I know the people that created Cinnabon, and they actually monopolized and purchased the highest rated concentration of cinnamon in the world. So when it actually heated, it would perfume the airports. It was no chance. It was not by accident. When you walk in an airport, you're like, oh, I gotta have one. You know, you're in security. What, sir? Put your hands on the table. I just lost my train of thought. Cinnabons. Yes, smells, right? So break bread and the smell of sauteed garlic or onions in a pan. If you have children, you want to get them to eat spinach or broccoli or cauliflower, start with a pan, any pan, with garlic and onions, and they will eat it. Guaranteed. Trader Joe's, you just have a garlic oil. That's awesome. You could do that even faster. Anything with garlic, most kids will eat. And for God's sake, don't dumb down your food because they're a kid. Have them eat the same food. One of the reasons I'm a chef is because I was never dumbed down. We didn't have a kid's table. We ate everything they ate, and we had to try everything. And if we didn't like it, okay, you tried it. But we tried everything. And then I, as a kid, I mean, 8 years old, I would try to out-eat my grandfather on the lajiao, which is the hot sauce. And we used to sit around. Every Friday, we'd eat, and we'd play mahjong afterwards. But sometimes he would do something called jiajiaomian, which is the Chinese spaghetti. So it's the hoisin kind of meat sauce and handmade noodles. I mean, Grandpa, yeah, did everything. He grew his own chilies to make his own sambal. He did his own dumpling wrappers, everything from scratch. And we sat down at jiajiaomian. He had the meat sauce, the bean sprouts, the carrots, the cucumbers, the raw cloves of garlic, and we would watch Grandpa, because you take a bite of everything and you take a bite of garlic. And you'd watch him. So once he took a bite, we all had to take a bite. Because afterwards, when we played Mahjong, we'd be like, hello. And you're like, oh, Grandpa, you win, buddy. So the only way to combat that is you just start. And you'd eat like 3 or 4 cloves. You know, of course, we never got sick. You like, and we also never had friends, but whatever. Who needed friends? We were Chinatown, you know? People still would come to us, though. They wanted good food in Dayton, Ohio. You came to 303 through Locust Camp Road. I was just there, literally, 3 days ago, and drove by my house and just there, and I can't say it smelled like garlic, but if I went in, actually, funny enough, at the book sign, the woman that says, you don't know me, but we live in your house. I'm like, really? It's pretty funny. I was like, do you still have that huge stove? Because my parents, right, they had the kitchen. We had the most gigantic commercial stove with 8 burners and a griddle and a salamander, and it was just like, doesn't everyone have these? I mean, it's gigantic. So that's kind of the book in a nutshell. And I have to get a little shout out to Artie Bohm, who's my co-writer. He's co-written 3 books with me. Any chefs out there? So, yeah. If you ever want to do a book, you have to get a co-writer. Because chefs were busy. You'll never get a book out if you think, I'll just do it myself. You'll get it out, but it won't be nearly as good because a co-writer brings the story out. He asks why hoisin sauce? Why, you know? So you have to have a co-writer. I'd never have any books out if I didn't have Artie. So that's kind of the story of the book. I mean, I'm very excited about it. It's certainly... obviously, every recipe is tested, which is something that I think is just prerequisite for all cookbooks. It's not always the case, but these are foolproof recipes. And the good news is you will have happy kids, happy husband, happy wife if you make this food, because it's not hard. I mean, at the end of the day, it's just cooking, right? It's not – look – And I'll say this for the record. This cookbook, all my cookbooks, every cookbook in this store, none of them are gospel. A cookbook is written to inspire, hopefully. So if you're making that dish like you're looking at there, right, ma'am, not paying attention to me, that's okay. No, I'm just kidding. If you have, you know, Latino influence and you want a jalapeno in it or something, go for it. Because then you're actually cooking yourself. And that's the idea of a cookbook, to inspire you to think, oh, I love this, but why can't I wrap this in a corn tortilla? Or I love this, but I don't like mushrooms. Can I do it? Or I love this, but even like, the back cover dish, you could do that without chicken and be a vegetarian dish. It would still be delicious. And the idea is to get you thinking like a chef and start creating yourself. Because at the end of the day, nothing is going to blow up in your face and kill you, right? It's still food. And as long as you do the most basic taste as you go, when you're making it, taste. And when you do these braises, please taste, because how that liquid tastes before it covers and cooks for 2-3 hours is how your meat's going to taste at the end. So taste that liquid. Don't taste at the end, because you can't really add salt to a lamb shake at the end, because then you're eating salt with lamb shake, as opposed to a luscious, unctuous broth that got into the lamb shank to the bone is night and day. So you have to cook and season at the same time. You can't just cook and then at the end of the day season. It's not really true in this book, because there's not a lot of dim sum and dumplings, but when you do, if you have my other books, do dumplings or spring rolls, taste that filling. Don't make 100 dumplings. I'm like, God, I wonder if it's seasoned well. Then what do you do with the 99 dumplings? You're SOL. Taste as you go. So, which means cook a little bit of the dumpling wrapper. Throw it in a microwave. Microwave is great for 2 things. Three things. Melting chocolate, reheating your coffee, and tasting fillings. That's all we do. We test fillings in a microwave. Bzz, then boom, your pork's done, because you don't really want to eat raw pork and raw chicken. Although, I was recently in Tokyo and had the best pig brain sashimi, bar none. I mean, the poor pig was, I'm like, dude, it's okay. No, it's a dead pig. Unlike the monkeys in China, I never had that. I don't think I could do that. Yeah, it'd be tough. Delicious. It's a cult following restaurant, and everything was sashimi. Kidneys, heart, brain. I would never do it in this country, but the way they raise pigs in Japan, it's pristine. I mean, they have a better life than most of us Ohioans, you know? And pristine. They've never had trichinosis in Japan. Never. So I'm not going to be going out tonight having pig brain sashimi, I doubt. That's kind of the book. But I would love to open this to you all. You don't have any questions or anything, do you? About anything? Sir? Glasses?
Did you have another career path in mind before you decided you could make money cooking?
Make money? Is that an option? Got to talk to my publisher. Well, I mean, I have a degree in mechanical engineering. I studied mechanical engineering in college. So I guess that was supposed to be my career path. I had a couple of rules growing up in Dayton, Ohio. One was, and I ended up going to Andover. I mean, I'm very blessed. I've been schooled well, meaning my parents took care of me, sent me to Andover. My grandfather went to Yale. My dad went to Yale. My brother was at Yale, and I got into Yale by skinny. It's fortunate I played squash because I did not get in on my board scores. I can tell you that. Not even close. But our rules growing up was get any grade you want, as long as it's straight A's. Be anything you want, as long as it's a doctor, lawyer, engineer. And marry anyone you want, as long as they're Chinese. I'm 0 for 3. I mean, not even close on any of those counts. Not even close. And so you can imagine. And my parents are, if you've seen them on my show, I assume, I hope you have. I mean, they're very cool and hip. I'm first generation, so they're born in Beijing. But my dad was already at Yale during the revolution. My grandfather fled to Taipei with grandma and the youngest of my uncles. And so when Chinese first came here, we basically built railroads. Right? We immigrated here. We built railroads. The railroads are done. Then the little gold rush happened. We did that. Once that was over, it was like one of the only métiers, because there's no language. We didn't speak English. We spoke Chinese. Was cooking. So that became like the go-to métier that the Chinese did. And that's pretty much a blue-collar job. So you can imagine that I go to Andover and then, I tell my parents I want to be a cook. It's like, really? That's $300,000 wasted. You know, you could have told me that. We had opened you a restaurant. And the true story, though, when I came back from Cordon Bleu, I went to France every summer. So there was not just completely haphazard. I mean, look, I worked at my mom's Chinese restaurant in Dayton, Ohio. So they knew I loved to cook. They knew I got the restaurant bug. They knew I loved the whole very simple concept is that if you're a chef and you can make good food at a good price, you can make people happy, which is a great job to have. You know, I mean, I think musicians and artists and, you know, there's a lot of jobs that are like that, but food is instant. I mean, when you leave my restaurant, I know instantly. You do a piece of sculpture, you may not know, you may be dead before people realize how great you were, right? But food is either the plate's clean or it's not, so you know instantly. So it's a great job to have, and that is why I'm a chef. So you can imagine after coming back from Cordon Bleu, the first thing I said to myself is, "Damn, the French can cook too," because I didn't know I cooked Chinese food my whole life. So, and the first thing I thought was, "Why can't I do Frenese cuisine, French Chinese? Why can't I blend?" And so I came back all jazzed, and I had to sit my parents down. This is junior year. I said, "Mom, Dad, look, thank you. Thank you for sending me to these great schools. Thank you for everything. I want to cook. I want to be a chef." And my dad is actually the only genius, true genius I've ever met. He was chief scientist at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, designed the B-1 bomber, pretty good plane, I think on a cocktail napkin practically. And so he's an aeronautical engineer. Now he's at Stanford, and he's written all these books. He's giving out iPads to all these people because he talks to and consults with Boeing and McDonnell Douglas and Airbus and anything between cars and tennis rackets, squash rackets, skis, everything. Anything graphite, he's the man. And so I sat him down and said, "Mom, Dad, look, I want to be a chef." And my mom, who's incredibly ebullient and loving and she hugs me and goes, "Son, that's awesome. Follow your passion. We love you. You know, just promise to give 110%. We support you 100%. And I looked at Dad, who's much more pensive and mellow. And I'm like, "Dad," he's like, "Son, you weren't going to be a very good engineer anyway. Go cook." I'm like, "Wow, Dad, really?" I can do square root. And but for the record, and even though I'm a failure 0 for 3, there's nothing that makes Chinese parents prouder than eating for free at Blue Ginger. Gary, I mean, when they come for 6 days, they'll have 13 meals. Lunch, dinner, and different friends every time. And we actually had their 80th, we had their 50th anniversary. There's 85 people. Five couples stood up that were married 50 years or more. Which is, I mean, and Actually, they were all Asian, to be honest. They're actually his brothers. And I like white people, too. I married one. No, it's okay. No. My kids are half-half, so it's all good. No, but look, it's the soy, and because my dad learned early on that red wine is really tasty and good for you, so he got the power of the soy with soy sauce and tofu and whatnot, and he also got the power of red wine. So he got double-fisted on that. So, but yeah, it's amazing. I mean, anyone married 50 years here? 50 years? Congratulations. That's awesome. And you don't look Chinese. I mean, maybe. You may be from like Shanghai or something. I mean, that's awesome. Congrats. Questions? Comments?
Well, do you think the Food Network and various food have helped like get back into Americans cooking at home again or anything like that? Or?
Oh, yeah. I think the Food Network has done a bunch of stuff. I mean, obviously public television is my home, and you know, Julia and the Frugal Gourmet and all of them, they started it. But it didn't get into hyperdrive until actually Emerald Live. Because when Emerald started, he sucked. He was horrible, as was I, as was Mario, as was Bobby, because we're chefs. I mean, how do you talk into a machine? You know, it's hard. And fortunately, we all got a little better as it went. But then Emerald had Emerald Live, and what it did was it got America thinking about food. It got America realizing that there is a better way to make a meatloaf. It got America to realize what caviar was. Not that people in Ohio start going and start buying caviar, but at least they saw what it was, that it was actually fish eggs that are brine. And on and on and on, and how you make the best grilled cheese, and people got really excited. So I hate the term celebrity chef, because Brad Pitt's not a celebrity actor, you know, and Tom Brady's not a celebrity quarterback. He's just a quarterback and an actor, right? But they throw that moniker on for whatever reason, but it got America thinking. It got grocery stores buying bread or produce. In conjunction with Food Network and the web, grocery stores started getting good ginger and lemongrass and sesame oil and tamari and soy sauce, et cetera, et cetera. And everyone started traveling a little bit more. So they would go to Thailand or even to New York City and come back to Ohio and be like, look, I had this great Thai food or Japanese food, and people started becoming more demanding. So all this has helped. And look, I'm one of the lucky ones. Between me, Mario, myself, Bobby, and Sarah Moulton, we say all the time that we got to jump on Emerald's train. Because he made it fun, right? And Emerald's the nicest guy in the world. And he does not say bam in real life, all right? He doesn't like, hi, honey, bam. No, he doesn't do that. He doesn't. But he was a huge entertainer. And he got, he's a great entertainer. And he also got kids involved. And I have, I mean, it's crazy, but some of these mothers that tell me that their 2 and 3 year old love my show, and 10 years ago, Emerald and I were together, we're talking about this, and we finally realized the reason is in a cooking show, just like newscasters, we're looking in your eyes, so kids actually think we're talking to them. You watch Friends or anything else in Seinfeld, you're a bystander, but cooking shows, you're talking to them. So there's that. Plus, they recognize that that's broccoli because they saw mom or dad cook it. And there's a little fire. And sometimes there's music. So it's very, you know, harmless, entertaining. And that, of course, drives everything, including restaurant decisions. You know, kids make more restaurant decisions than adults, for sure. Right? Is the owner of Cheesecake Factory here? No, I'm just kidding. But kids do, right? So why do you think they have Happy Meals? It's not for the parents. It's because the kids want. Why do you think there's a toy in Cheerios, right? It's the kids. It's all marketing. And then there's pros and cons of that whole story too. But thank God for the popularization of food and people wanting to learn how to cook more. Because it was not inherent in the American culture. I mean, of course, we've always cooked here. But it was not a priority since day one as much. It was really more for sustenance as opposed to maybe in China or in France. It was really, we're taking 2-hour lunch and this is what we do. Period. And we were, you know, during every industrial epic and era we had here, it was about go, 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 go. And dining room table fell. And so now, fortunately, the biggest trend, as you probably all know, is comfort food, as it's called. And, you know, a lot of these are comfort food, which is just, and I totally recommend to serve a lot of these things family style. Take the whole pan, the cast iron, the whole pot, put it on a trivet, put it in the middle of the table. It's just such a nicer way to eat. The food stays hot. You can take more rice or less rice. You can have 2 pieces of chicken. It's just a greater way to eat. And it's more family, which is, I think, the point.
Silly question, but white rice or brown rice?
White rice or brown rice? Oh, yeah, I'm not supposed to be asking the question a little bit. Sorry. White rice or brown rice? It's a great question. I finally realized, and we do this at Blue Ginger as of 2 years, we do a 50-50 combo. Because you go straight brown rice, some people don't like that nice. Kids aren't huge fans of straight brown. I like straight brown, the nuttiest, but a lot of people don't. So quite often in the book, I recommend the house rice, which is 50-50. And the way you do it, there's two things you have to do. Buy a rice cooker. Right, $29, $39, $49, however big you want. You can spend, and I admit I have one because I eat a lot of rice. I have an induction rice cooker made by Jojirushi, which costs $350, but it is so good. Induction is magnetic energy that makes the molecules of the pan move really quickly, so it heats like that. So a pot of rice can cook in 20 minutes because it heats not only bottom but up on the sides. It's amazing. It makes perfect rice. So, but you can get a $29 one from Target as well. But it's so much better than trying to cook rice on the stove because you burn your rice all the time. You just don't want to have to think about rice. You got your kids running around, your husband running around, your boyfriend running around. You shouldn't have them in the same room. But anyway. So get a rice cooker, and if you do the 50-50 combo, soak the brown rice for an hour in water by itself, because brown rice does take more water. So soak it for an hour, and then you can mix it too and wash it, then cook it. But that's what I like. And we make all our fried rice. We did it at the restaurant, didn't tell a customer. We just made our lobster fried rice with the lobster with it. No one said anything. So much better for you. All rice is brown, right? All rice is brown. And once you hull it, then it turns white. And then sake, of course, the more you polish it, the more fine it gets, the more expensive it gets, but the purer it gets. I don't think I do. I mean, I've actually never done Top Chef. I mean, I'll give you the quick story. So I've been asked 3 years in a row to do Iron Chef, right? And Top Chef Masters asked as well. And there was no prize. There's a great prize, $100,000 to your favorite charity, which is, I would never snuff at that. It's a great prize. But there was no prize, like, to be an Iron Chef, which is a great prize, I think. And because I used to watch it, I mean, is there anything better than Fukui-san, the Iron Chef, is using panko, back to you? And the best is, I don't like panko. I mean, the dumb Japanese blonde dubbing, there's nothing better on TV than that, right? Oh my God. So, for the record, Iron Chef America doesn't even come close to Iron Chef Japan. There's no live octopus, there's no hat, you know. So, Iron Chef Japan is, and I'll give you a good Morimoto story in a sec. But having said that, it's still very cool. Look, I huge respect to obviously Morimoto-san, who's the only real Iron Chef. And look, Bobby can cook, although I crushed him. But anyway, that's just a side star. I got lucky. It was. But for the record, that was duck. If me, Chinese man, lose to Caucasian battle duck, I would have been ostracized from every Chinese restaurant in the freaking country. My kids would be like, why are we going Mexican? Shut up. We're going to eat Mexican. No Chinese. I want dumplings. Shut up. Tacos. You know? It would have been really a deal breaker. Probably be divorced. Finally, because my agent's like, dude, don't do that next. What do you want to do next Iron Chef for you? You could lose first and it'd be embarrassing, and you're already on TV. You got your Emmy. What do you don't? No. So no pass. Second year, no pass. Third year, I'm like, look. And I, you know, because he is my agent, so he does, in theory, work for me. I'm like, look, Sandy, I want to do this. I think it'll be fun because... I was wrong there, but I thought it'd be fun. But it was fun because I'm the most competitive person I know. I mean, I race my children up staircases and I beat them because I still can. Boom. Sorry, Henry. Oh, God. Oh. He's 8. But you know what? He should have his hands up, right? That's how you learn. And I love food. And I'm pretty decent, right? I mean, I'm pretty decent with a knife. I'm quick. So it's a good form for me. And obviously doing TV is no... I mean, I've been around cameras for 15 years. So that didn't affect me. So I knew I'd have a slight advantage in a way. And look, and it's funny, half the guys there call me Uncle Ming. I'm like, you know, Knorr is 42 and I'm 46. Like, dude, if I'm your uncle, then I did lots with your mother. So I don't think you want to call me your uncle. But some of them were 20 and 24 and they're young thing, you know, so I convinced my Sandy, I said, look, and this is not an overconfident statement, but I just knew I was not going to be the weakest of 10 people. There's just no way I was going to lose first. I didn't even think about that. It's so funny. Everyone, when we were doing the first one, everyone kept saying, I hope I don't lose. I hope I'm not the first one off. Everyone, all nine said that. And I'm like, why are you even thinking that? Because, I mean, I do believe in The Secret, actually, which is a very popular book. You project, you get. You project, you get. And I didn't even think about I'm going to lose first round, you know. And I didn't, thank God. So to answer your question, I absolutely cooked my food. It was not, okay, let's impress the judges. You know, for the quick fire, you're trying to have everyone like your food, right? All the fellow. And, you know, some of them are, like, it's all strategy. They never wanted me to get an advantage. So even if it was good, oh, that's not seasoned. I mean, you know, whiny Kenora, right? I mean, come on, dude. Really? And he actually is a friend. But although he saved himself yesterday because he actually did say I cleaned the machine. I thought they were going to edit that out, that I just destroyed the machine and walked away. Because that actually would have pissed me off. That's a Food Network editing. And fortunately, they actually had Kenora say, you know, Ming did the right thing. And I was happy to see that because I would have been really annoyed if that didn't. Because obviously I did clean the machine. But yeah, look, the judges are all special people. And the thing that tipped the scale to want me to do it is Michael Simon, who is a great friend. And he called me as I was considering, goes, dude, you have to do Next Iron Chef. I'm like, why? He goes, one, I'm a judge. Now, not that he's going to sway towards me, but meaning I am a chef and can appreciate what you're going through because I'm a chef and understand what you're going through because you're a chef, right? And, you know, and I'm a few years older than Michael, and I've known Simon for many years. Alton Brown is a great friend of mine as well. Now, what ended up happening, of course, is once I showed up, everyone knew, not only the contestants, but all the production people all knew I was great friends with both of them. And in a way, it backfired because they actually made Michael be extra mean to me to show no favoritism. So, you know, I mean, I don't think he lied or anything. I mean, he really didn't like my pho. And for the record, I ended up putting the oxtail at the very end. I was so freaking tired. That three hours of intensity. When I destroyed Bobby, it was 1 hour. Intense. But 1 hour done. 60 minutes. Times three and running around a kitchen. I mean, it was from here to the children's to over there. I mean, basically, you're running this. And then at the very end, you're carrying these 85-pound gyrodons to set up your... I mean, I'm surprised people didn't get hurt, to be honest, because most of them were not in very good shape, to be honest. Most chefs aren't. And which is why I laugh at this. I'm the old man. I'm like, dude, I could outrun you in anything you want. You name the sport, you name the tiddlywink, I can kill you. I can crush you. And so I did cook my food. I mean, I really stuck to my guns. Look at Manit Chauhan. She kept making patties. You know, basically the judges said, your patties suck. Stop making them. She makes them again. We're like... they suck. She makes them again. And then she's gone. Right? I mean, that's just stupid. Right? Actually, the stupidest thing that happened was when Dusky voted for herself. Right? The very first show. It's the first quick... And she's like... And she even asked Alton, says, can I vote for myself? And he said, quote unquote, yes, you could, but that would be incredibly obnoxious. It's never been done before. Okay, I vote for myself. She already mathematically won. If she paid attention, she already had enough votes to win. So she could have voted for, as long as she didn't vote for the person in second, she would have won. So she, you know, she marked herself. And that's, you know, that's just youth, I guess. I mean, but to her credit, she thought she had the best dish. So I can't, you know, and that's what I said on camera. I don't think they ever played what I said. I'm like, look, she really thought it was the best dish. powers to her. I mean, she has bigger balls than me, but power to her, you know? And, I mean, but we loved her, actually. She was so funny. I mean, she really, the first thing she said to us was, "Your face hurt?" We're like, "What?" She goes, "Did your face hurt?" I mean, that's how she was. She was just off the cuff, just screwball, which was great. I mean, that she was good for TV. And so, yeah, I mean, it was, but the 3-hour challenge was just brutal. And this next one's pretty brutal. But it's fun. Sort of. I mean, it's just long. It's like secret ingredient, and then, yeah, you know, you're racking your brains. You do get time, right? You get about 30 minutes before the quick fire. Towards the end, you get a day to think about it. Because Food Network wants, and they said this, they promised this in the beginning, that they didn't want to embarrass anyone. They wanted everyone to look good, and they wanted someone to look great. And they actually stuck to that. I would have preferred if it was mystery bag, go. Because I actually would have had an advantage. I'm not better than anyone. I'm just older. So being older, I've seen more things. And I would be able to adapt quicker. But so having time to think about it, actually it almost did me in on the second show. Because on the second show, I did the corned beef hash. 30 minutes into the challenge, I was done. Done. And I'm like, oh, this is great. Then I'm thinking, oh, there's lobster. And I went and got some lobster. And then I said, oh, I need the sauce. I need the secondary sauce. I need the starch. And then that plate became, you know, ridiculous. And, I was second to the bottom. Fortunately, I didn't go then. I was kind of hoping that Michael Simon, hello, buddy, amigo. So fortunately, I didn't go. But two of us go next week. Thank you guys very much. Appreciate it.
That's all for tonight's Author on Tour. I'm Darren Fode, and we have been podcasting live from the Tattered Cover Bookstore in Denver, Colorado. Authors on Tour Live has been presented by Belco Credit Union. Belco has been serving members' financial needs since 1936. Visit www.belco.org/authors.asp to learn more about how Belco can help you. Stay pod tuned in the coming weeks for many more authors as we podcast Authors on Tour.